Greetings, comrades, and welcome to the Eastern Border. This was a highly interesting day. We had a conversation with the rescue operations in Mykolaiv here, a press lady. I'm gonna write about that too. Again, everything here needs to be super confirmed and triple confirmed, and let's not get into any trouble here. And turns out that, in general, every other person who is here with the rescuers and, well, most military people as well, they are not allowed to speak with press at all. And also, me and Anthony here, we managed to get an interview with the governor, Mr. Kim, from this region. Apparently, he's super famous in Ukraine and elsewhere. He had been a media personality like Arestovich had been. And, I had forgotten him. At least he's not very well known in Latvia. Or so I thought for a while, until I put two and two together and remembered that this was the same fellow who was targeted by Russians because of his public statements. And we visited this, well, previously used Mykolaiv district town hall. It's not a town hall, it's, I don't know, governor's building, where they do administrative building. Mykolaiv district administrative building, yes. And it was bombed. Posted pictures on Twitter. It was struck by a fighter bomber plane, and what really stunned me was that how the local mayor's office's press secretary just casually stated that apparently the explosion had burnt up everything on the inside, all the oxygen, so the windows hadn't exploded on the outwards, they were just smashing in the inside, which left a mark. Also, well, we figured out that, well, local rescuers are very thankful, but they're going to have some issues with some specialized equipment, and they're already thinking about mines. More on details on that upcoming. Also, in the upcoming news, our fixer here basically stated that we might have a chance, and it looks like a good chance, but again, the timelines are very murky here, because again, everything changes, we are forced to wait, and stuff doesn't happen as planned, which is, well, kind of planned here because it's the front lines, basically, with Dagestanis, with some Dagestani leader of their protests, which have been happening and are very, very violent today since, turns out that, and this comes from conflict intelligence team, that the local governors there, before the National Guard was sent in, apparently managed to tell the crowd, when there was only riot police around in Dagestan, very blatantly and openly that, we're going to pick up everyone. It doesn't matter that the military operation, this whole mobilization thing, that's limited. That it doesn't matter. We're going to pick up everyone. And when people started to protest, they openly stated that, yes, we're going to take everyone and we're going to send them to the front in a very blatant, callous way. And seeing that Dagestan itself, it's a region right next to Chechnya, and again, they're disproportionately affected. Like I said at the beginning of the war, they're one of the poor regions. And according to my sources, apparently they had been very much neglected during the COVID era, all the money going to Kadyrov's Chechnya. So there was a lot of dying in the mountain villages, since it is the Caucasus Mountains. And also previously they've been held under an iron fist, as Dagestan is one of those regions which is, at least on paper, always was 99.9% elections. Everywhere else in Russia, they try to do some 86% or something of that sort, bit more legitimate. Dagestan was always 99% attendance, 99% voting for Putin. And we had very little information coming from out of there, because very secretive region, the societies are still rural, there's not that large cities there, there's many tinier villages, so the protest itself, which is somewhat decentralized, is organized through Telegram, through the means of basically they just gather around and once they just tell people that you should go gather around, but they don't post their centralized locations where those people could gather. It's a weird system, since again, tribal society in a way is still very strong there. They have those tapes just like in Ingushetia. So we're gonna have to meet someone that's considered a leader of opinions there. At least that's how he was presented to me. And apparently also someone who is now fighting in Ukraine for them for like fighting with Dagestanis who have fled Putin's government here in Ukraine, but they obviously have all the contacts from people inside there, and possibly also someone who has suffered from the police there in those protests. But I can't promise you that, since that all is very, very murky. So far, we've also heard news that a lot of Dagestani channels on Twitter have been taken down since, well, they are spreading the news about what's happening there. Also, that Ramzan Kadyrov apparently has received a personal order to go and quell these protests. So that's another weird issue. At any rate, we sincerely hope that tomorrow I will get this interview. They asked us to spread it around to as many people as we can. If it happens, our fixers are really interested in making that happen as well, because that would be big news for, well, everyone involved. And, well, we'll see. We'll see. It looks kind of okay, but again, the timing is the issue. Meanwhile, in Russia, well, there, a school shooting happened. Today was, like, full of terrorists and weird things. A school shooting happened in Izhevsk, Udmurtia. And apparently, well, of course, pro-Russian Telegram channels are already blaming it on Western intelligence agencies. Quote, "The shooting in Izhevsk and Ust-Limsk is something we have written about many times. Western intelligence agencies are working through social networks, preparing mentally unstable people for terrorist attacks. Sabotage groups like Basayev of Chechnya are no longer needed." Meanwhile, it's just people going crazy because of the mobilization. And also today, a person shot a conscription officer, just like shot him, and then in the end the officer died. Now the thing is that due to weird Russian laws, this person who shot this officer there, apparently he was very angry about his best friend being conscripted or mobilized. I think mobilized is better in this case, and so he just, well, killed him. The officer died from the wounds in the hospital. But according to Russian law, he now faces up to 8 years in prison, which he'll probably get. Weirdly enough, if he had shot the same conscription officer outside of the mobilization building, then he would have gotten up to 6 years in prison. Meanwhile, according to the new Russian criminal laws, Putin's kind of new orders about if you are mobilized and then run away from it are up to 10 years in prison. So now there's a bit of a grim comedy running around Twitter about how, well, it is better to just literally shoot your conscription officers rather than face mobilization. Meanwhile, we also have some news from the front, and, well, of course it's from Igor Girkin, who is going to plop up on another YouTube channel, which has been founded, and I'm dumbfounded by the fact, since Igor Girkin himself has been banned from YouTube for literally terrorism, since MH17 and all that stuff, but he's there. I've reported the channel already. I like Girkin as a source, but I don't want him to get any money from me, like, watching him, so that's a thing. But he states this, quote, "Briefly about the situation on the front lines. Fierce fighting continues in the Liman area. The enemy," the Ukrainians, again, all the new people, please check out previous posts. Igor Girkin is on the Russian side, and I'm just using him as a source. "The enemy is trying to use his advantage in manpower, since the terrain in the city area is wooded and rugged, with a relatively underdeveloped road network, which on the one hand does not allow the use of large forces of armored vehicles of the roads, and on the other hand contributes to covert concentration and preparation of infantry units for an advance. So far, the Ukrainians have not succeeded in encircling Liman, but they have tactical advantages in its vicinity almost every day. On the Donetsk front, local, in Girkin's opinion completely unintelligible, attacks by the units of the Russian Federation Armed Forces, private military companies, and the Luhansk-Donetsk People's Republics continue on the enemy's fortified positions. Successes are purely tactical, not worth the losses incurred. Zaporozhye frontline. The lull and the concentration of troops continues. Most reporters expect that the main offensive of the armed forces of Ukraine will take place in this sector." I am not sure about that at all, by the way. "On the Kherson front, where we're going to go tomorrow. On the Kherson front, over the past 3 days, a significant weakening of enemy activity, a non-intensive exchange of artillery and missile strikes continues." We have experienced this non-intensive exchange of artillery and missile strikes. We had some air alarms this evening even, and And during the day as well, when we were traversing and being taken into this exploded and struck administration building, that was really scary. But yeah, let's hope that it continues to be a bit safer there, at least tomorrow and the day after that. On the Belgorod front, artillery skirmishes and sorties of the armed forces of Ukraine continue. Then, of course, everyone is being very worried about how the defense against the Russian drones will happen. Apparently, they have just received, well, approved to be received, the new anti-air systems, which are going to be very confusing, but because no one really managed to answer how exactly will they be implemented, but that will clearly increase the security of the Ukrainian airspace. Meanwhile, well, an observation from Alexander, we are losing the copter, Sladkov. Yeah, that's the same guy with the meme face, but he apparently posts on pro-Russian Telegram channels. He posts some interesting observations and, well, as usual by now, he points out what's wrong with Russia and, well, basically claims that punishing the guilty definitely must take root. So far, the only punishment of the guilty was the yesterday mentioned firing of the logistics officer, but that's about it. In general, kind of just more interesting information that, you know, you guys might find useful. Quote, we have a lot of artillery in the SMO, guns, howitzers, mortars. We put out a sea of fire. The only problem is we're not shooting accurately. Are the gunners to blame? I do not think so. If, as a quiz, you could tell me the latest systems that we use, I would be grateful. Think about it and I will help you. MSTA, commissioned 40 years ago. Pion gun, 42 years ago. Mortar Tulpan, 56 years ago. D-30, 60 years ago. Rapira, 62 years ago. 120mm mortar, 63 years ago. Mortar 82mm, 72 years ago. Yes, experts will say, Sasha, the West also has old guns. It's all about the new ammunition. And they will be right. But then, why are we using the old Soviet ammunition? Why, when disposing of ammunition, we first destroyed new ammunition but never got our hands to the oldest? Now we have a new, born in 1986, Krasnopol guided projectile, but it is advisable to use it with laser guidance using the Orion 30 UAV. But there are no Orion 30s. It is so rare, you could say we don't have it. Therefore, if I start writing about artillery reconnaissance and guidance systems, it will become completely vulgar. They know this very well both on the higher-ups and below. Don't blame the gunner, he does the best he can. And he posted a video there and states that, quote, you can see how gunners hit enemy strongholds. See how many craters are scattered around in the field? If we had accurate artillery systems, then 100 times fewer shells would be enough. War is costly, and we must thank those due to whom we are forced to load, reload, carry, hide and store, bring to firing positions, load and shoot 1,000 times more than we should. Who is guilty? Find and punish them. Here he also doesn't mention the fact that Russian military often uses their superiority in shells, which they have, for now, which might go away soon since the world reacts to Putin and his actions, of course, but, you know, they like to waste ammunition on civilian targets rather than striking military goals, which is a thing that probably if you would find and, you know, punish the perpetrators, then you'd have to go to the very top, really, which obviously isn't going to happen. Meanwhile, also on the Georgian border, they allowed pedestrians to cross at one point. It was a massive wave of chaos. And the whole chat room, which I also mentioned yesterday, yeah, it's now full with people literally yelling at the evil pedestrians who are now clogging up the whole 2,500 long car entry to Georgia. At the same time, apparently Finland is starting to close its borders. We've heard a lot of reports about the Finnish people being quite unhappy about the sudden concentration of Russian cars and all the hotels being filled up in Helsinki and other areas. And meanwhile, well, if you're Norwegian, then, you know, you're probably next, because currently in all the Russian liberal Telegram channels and everywhere, Norwegian border up there is portrayed as somewhat of a next point of entry as they seek to exit the war and the mobilization. And it's been recommended to go there via a tour bus via Murmansk. So, because that border also can't be crossed on foot, both by permission and because, well, it's up there. The border with Russia and Norway is really up there. And I don't know how they're going to make it through, but yeah, seems like people will be starting to flood there as well. But we'll see how the mobilization goes, and I'll report what I can. First, I have some articles to finish, and well, certainly I hope that we'll get access to the Dagestanis. In the meantime, we also have a new sponsor for the show. It'll be very interesting to you, who are veterans, United States veterans mostly, but apparently the CEO of the company wants to expand his business to other countries as well. How I met the guy in person, he seems like a nice guy. We haven't done these, well, mid-roll, actually through us, not through Acast, sponsorships for a long while. Well, let's hope that the company's good, because that's a subject matter that I don't know anything about. Apparently, they help veterans get better home loans or something with mortgages. But as far as I know of, the CEO itself, it's not a huge company, but the CEO itself is a great person, and I hope this will work out. But that's it for now. And до свидания, товарищи. Thank you for all your support. Please consider becoming our patron, or in patreon.com/theeasternborder, or just clicking the donate button on theeasternborder.lv. You can, of course, on both of these sites, listen to our episodes ad-free. Well, except the one that I just mentioned, that's going to be in there, since I'm going to put it in instead of Acast, but still, for the most part. And as usual, happiness is mandatory.